Dear friends, in our study of Bhagavad Gita, we have reached, by the grace of God, the 7th chapter. And here a new line, so to say, begins, and that is of devotion. The yoga that was being told as the practical science of learning, you know, how to experience these great scriptural truths, and to know that they are not mere theories, but they are something that can enrich our day-to-day practical life and will lead us to the ultimate illumination. So, as an important aspect of that was being told, and that discussion will continue further, that is to turn our emotions in the direction of the goal. Turning our actions, very good, that has been discussed in last 6 chapters, but turning the emotions to that goal is also very important. Turning the intellect also is very important. All these wonderful ideas will be discussed gradually as we go ahead. The last class we were seeing that we should understand that we are very fortunate that we have begun this study of Bhagavad Gita, or we have in our mind this desire to realize the truth, which is not a very commonplace one. People will have other worldly desires, and you will find them in big numbers. But there are very few who want to explore this deepest truths about life. These deepest, most profound and most illuminating ideas are just left aside by majority of people as unimportant and unnecessary in life. What is most necessary according to them is what brings me money or the fleeting sensual pleasures. That is considered to be most important things, and thus people flock wherever they can get these things. But the desire for, say, realization of God, or to understand or experience the true self, very few try for that. As has been told in the 3rd verse that we were seeing, that in thousands of human beings, maybe rarely somebody tries to search for this realization. Yatati, kaschid yatati. That very few try. And of these few try, some people of them succeed. And again, very few amongst them can reach the ultimate goal. So some find some levels of fulfillment in this search, but very few are fortunate to get to the ultimate goal. So the idea in telling us is not to discourage us, that, well, after all, the success rate is so little, why should I give it a try at all? That is not what is suggested here. What is told is, as we saw, that twofold implications here. That one is that the truth is not to be determined according to what is majority. Majority is not the standard of truth. Majority of people not too long ago used to believe that the earth is flat. But that doesn't mean that it was the truth. It is like that. The majority, they go by their just sensual immediate perception instead of exploring. They do not want to explore. So very few try to explore. So these higher truths are not really being searched by everyone, in fact by very few. So let us remember this, that what is being sought by majority is not always what is ultimately beneficial or ultimately true either. Then second important implication of this is that this is a very rare thing. So when you have something very rare and very valuable, not easily obtainable, then you preserve it with great care. That this is a rare piece. Somebody was telling me the other day, they have a piece of china, and then it was a very precious piece because it is a rare something. You won't get it. They say the another piece pairing this, and this is the rare piece. So they were preserving it. So rare, if something is available, commonplace, you can go and go to Walmart and get it, or Stop and Shop or such places where everybody can go and buy it, then it is not rare and you need not bother much about it. Even if you lose, you can substitute it, replace it. But this is a very rare thing. And therefore, one should take care to preserve it. This little flame of spiritual search in us should not be allowed to get extinguished by worldly winds blowing around. One needs to protect it. You find this idea in Upanishads, like in Shvetashvatara Upanishad, also in Ishavasya Upanishad, that the spiritual urge that you got is something very precious. And so preserve it with great care. The examples given in Shvetashvatara Upanishad is like how a pregnant woman protects the fetus. It is a great something in life. So as her whole attention is there on it and takes every care that it should not get any hurt. It should not get hurt. It should not be subject to any problems. And therefore, even if she likes to do many things, she avoids, because now the important thing is this baby inside. So, Subhrito Garbha Iva Garbhini Bhi. So, that is told in Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Beautiful idea that in that way one should preserve one's this spiritual urge in life. Because the worldly winds are blowing all around, you know. The turbulent senses will just try to drag us towards these worldly pleasures, sensual pleasures. And that will cover up or just blow out this little light in us. This little shining flame in us will just get blown out. Therefore, take care. In Ishavasya Upanishad also, in the very first verse, it is told, Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha. By leading a life of renunciation, means a life of God awareness, try to protect this urge, this of spiritual illumination. This is very beautiful Marathi verse by Jnaneshwar, it is said that because of the great merit earned due to this good works done for birth after birth, one gets this liking for God. Liking for, say, chocolate comes automatically. You don't have to, do any good actions in the past for that. That comes automatically. But liking for God doesn't come automatically. It comes due to lot of good works done which have removed the covering of ignorance to some extent, and thus this person is able to feel that there is this divine, that is my true nature, I must realize it, I must uncover it. And then that is being told now in details, that this whole world is nothing but God. Why should your mind go to God? Why should you direct your mind to God? Because God is the substance, the reality of all the names and forms that you are experiencing. They are really nothing but God. And so your mind should now turn towards God, because that is the essence, the reality of everything that is being perceived. It is just like, you have the animal crackers. Now there are different shapes, and according to the different shapes you have different names to that. That this is, I am eating giraffe, or I am eating a rabbit, or I am eating an elephant. It is all the same substance. So similarly, all the different names and forms that we see around us, infinite variety is there. But all of them, in essence, are nothing but God. And therefore, a wise person, just as in case of animal crackers, a wise person, a child who doesn't understand things, that rabbit and the elephant, they are the real things. But the grown-up person knows that it doesn't make a difference at all. The essence in all of them is the same. So the essence in all these different forms that we come across, it is God alone. That alone is the essence of everything. So therefore, your mind should turn to God. That is the essence. As that story is told, that one man, having fallen, into poverty, was a rich man, but there probably was at that time similar depression that our nation is going through, and so became a pauper and then was a devotee. And then he had nice golden images of Lord Ganesha. And also that Lord Ganesha, the vehicle of Lord Ganesha is a mouse. So it came to such pass that he had to sell those idols of worship. He had no choice. He didn't want to. But what could he do? There was no money. So he took them to a goldsmith. And then goldsmith gave the price. He asked him, at what price would you buy this Ganesha, Lord Ganesha? He told the price. And what about mouse? Well, same price it is. I am telling you the price of gold. That same gold is there in mouse as well as Ganesha. For you those names and forms are there. For the goldsmith only that essence is there. That so, these names and forms that we see and get attached to them. That becomes our problem in life if we analyze what is the big botherations, all the problems in life is because we do not tune our mind to essence, are busy only with the names and forms. So, therefore, the mind should be switched to this essence. And Lord says, look, what is in this world? We see two different aspects here. One is the material aspect and then the consciousness aspect. Everything is just composed of these two. So Lord, in the coming two verses, is going to tell that all of that is really God alone. It is just the manifestation of God. Bhumirapo nalo vayu khammano buddhirevacha ahankar iti yamme bhinna prakritirashtadha apareyastvimam anyam prakritim vidhime param jivabhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intellect and egoism. Thus is my prakriti, nature divided into 8 categories. This is my lower prakriti. Different from this, O mighty Arm One, know that higher prakriti of mine, in the form of individual soul, by which this world is sustained. These two verses, they convey the essence of Vedanta philosophy, also the essence of the teachings of what is called Sankhya philosophy. So, this world is, whatever we see, is composed of the 5 elements. 5 elements means the 5 ways in which the world is perceived by us through 5 sense organs. So, each perception has these 5 constituents, that it gets seen, it gets heard, it gets touched, it gets tasted, and it gets smelled. So, these become the 5 elements. Apart from that, our world doesn't have anything. Then, there is the other aspects of that, the ego, the intellect, and the mind. So these 5 elements and our feelings, our intellect, and our ego, these are the other 3 parts, that is, this complete the 8-fold lower nature. 8-fold nature is this, that the 5 elements and then the inner parts of that, they are the mind, the intellect and the ego. And these 8 complete the description of the external world. But this is not enough. Lord says, this is my lower nature. Apart from this lower nature, there is a higher nature. This higher nature is, this is very important and difficult to grasp. So, a lower nature is all that is changing. Later on in the 13th chapter, that will be called the kshetra, the changing thing. Whatever we see is change. Like the process of seeing itself is change. The One way of saying is, sometimes we say, a very common expression, this is real because I see it. If you analyze it, it can be shown that it is not like that because you see it like that. What you perceive is only change. Seeing means what? Light rays or photons or whatever name you want to give it, it comes from there and strikes your that retina, and thus you get the perception of it. Now, what does it mean that whatever photons or whatever you may call it, waves, there are so many theories of light. So they also are changing, not that there is any steady wisdom about it. At one time some scientists believe like that, other set of scientists refutes and believe something else. After some days, some other theories come about it. But one thing is accepted by all, that something changes there, and then it strikes your eyes, and so now you see it. So whatever was there is no longer there. That is why you are seeing it. So you are seeing it like that means it is now no more like that. It is not like that, that is why you are seeing it. If you see this science of, for example, perceiving color, that you see something as red. Whatever you see as red, why you see it as red is that because all other wavelengths are not emitted by that. Only the red is emitted by that. So that object is nothing but red. It is everything but red. What you see as red is really not red, but everything, all other colors are really there. Red is being discarded from there. So that is why you see it as red. It is So similarly, one can argue about it that these perceptions that you have is only change. There is no stability about it. When you are saying, I saw this thing, while you are saying that the thing is changing, and you who is telling that also is changing. It is something that is continuously in flux. And yet, what a surprise that we still think that it is the same thing. What gives every changing thing an identity and a sense of stability, a sense of thatness? I would tell somebody that if suppose I have spoken of Sheila to somebody and now I want to introduce her to that person, I would say, this is the Sheila that I spoke to you about. Now what does it indicate now? That Sheila is changed really, but I know still it is same. And the person to whom I spoke, that person also in the meantime has changed. The one I who is telling, that also has changed. And yet each of these have something special that cannot be identified, that cannot be defined, that cannot be shown, because of which they have that sense of thatness or sameness. And what is it? Lord says, that is my higher nature, because of which things appear as they actually are and retain that perception as if it is that something. We get deluded by both of these, that the appearance that the things are changing, and also within the change somehow we perceive something that is not changing And associated with that, this is the same chair that I had been sitting on. Now what is same about it? If you analyze, nothing much same. This is my body. Now what is body? A series of chemical changes, and that is what one calls body. Continuously changing. It is said that every particle in the body is changed in every, it's about 7 years. Everything is changed. And yet, it is, we say, the same person, same body. It is very funny that what is same there, and yet, it is so strange that without this understanding, not you just understanding, a very firm conviction that something is there which does not change about it. We cannot do anything in life. All our life really depends essentially on this, that things are the same. They are that. The one to whom I told yesterday, the same person I am speaking to today, although there is change, in the clothing, there may be, the clothing change can be changed faster. The color of the skin and all, the skin may take longer to change, but still it is changing phenomena. Something deeper than that will change more slowly maybe, but still changing. And yet, just think of it, you know, that can we shake off this conviction that it is that very thing? I decided in the morning that I will be giving this Bhagavad Gita class and I will be discussing these verses. I am sure that that very person is giving this class. The one who gave the class last Friday, the same Yogatmananda is giving the class. I have no doubt about it. And you also, those of you of course who were present last Friday, have no doubt about it. You are not, even if somebody tries to tell you, No, that different Yogatmananda has been placed here today, you won't accept it. It is with this conviction that although everything is changing, there is an ID, an identity about it. And we cannot actually locate that identity. We cannot specify it. We can only point at something which is comparatively deeper and less changing. Like we can say these days DNA. Our real ID could be DNA or something in the eyes that they see, you know, that at the airport they see the eye, you know, they take your that driver's license or some other ID that you are carrying, and they have a flashlight or something. They look at the eye and then look at you. So see whether the eyes are same or not. Because other things can change more easily than that. So I asked one gentleman there, is it okay, looks like me? So he said, yes, the eyes look exactly same to me. Other things I don't care. The idea was I am not looking at any other thing. The eyes do match. So the ID is, we have the conviction that there is something that remains same. Although everything is changing, what remains same? It is the same city, Providence. If somebody is visiting the city, say after 30 years, will not be able to recognize much. It is, yes, this street looks familiar, but these things are all changed. What has happened to where there used to be a gas station here? It seems to be gone. What happened to it? It is all changes are there, but yet this is the same city of Providence, located at the same place. Now, what is same place? You take the reference of certain things and feel that it is the same place. But what reference you take, that also is changing. It is really inexplicable that how, although everything is changing, we cannot survive, we cannot live our life without the conviction that there is something that remains the same. Thatness of a thing. Where is thatness? I don't have really proper words to express this. Because whatever I can say by words, again, will be about those eight things, you know, that changing things. And therefore, I will not be able to, or no one will be able to really express what is that unchanging. And anything that we will point out will be changing something, and thus will not be able to pinpoint it. This cannot be pinpointed. What is that principle that does not give us the feel that it is changing? It is changing, and yet we know that it is the same thing. The same grains of rice that I put in the cooking pot. Now they are cooked. I am eating them. I know the same grains of rice which had been in the bag. I took it out and put it in the cooking pot. Now those very grains are cooked. There is so much of change, perceptible change, but yet that I know it is the same grain. Now what is same about it? The same tree. It might be some years back, a very little tiny tree. Now maybe it has grown to a huge 60 feet high. Now what will you call it? Is it same? Yes, it is same and yet not same. One may say that, oh, I remember 35 years ago I had planted it. Now, the same tree that was planted 35 years ago, we don't know now what is same there, yet the person feels same tree. It is very funny, but that is how it is, that in spite of the changes, we have a very firm conviction, so firm that our very life, day-to-day life, will be just impossible without it. It is, you told a person that, yes, I will be coming to meet you at this time. And so you go. Without that conviction of unchanging something, it is not possible. That I assured Charles that we will come to airport to pick you up. I forgot. But I acknowledged, I knew that the same I who told that we will come to pick you up at the airport has forgotten that. And so when he called from the airport, I remember, oh my, so it is... I rushed and then got him. So, it is, if I have no that idea of unchanging, then it would have been impossible, you know. Who came to the one who started from the or had bought the ticket is not the same, the one who is traveling. How could then they, with that conviction, our whole fabric of life will be just gone? It is possible only because of something that remains unchanged. And yet, when you try to show it, everything is changing. Isn't it a big dilemma? You cannot show a single thing that is not changing. Everything is in flux. And yet, something underneath that doesn't change. It is impossible to specify that. And therefore, Lord says that it is my higher nature. That is my higher nature by which you get this conviction, this perception that it is unchanging. Although everything appears to be changing, what holds it together? Yayedam dharyate jagat. So Lord also does not specify it. The eight elements in the lower nature he named them because we know it. So, they can be shown, they can be told. But this higher nature, Lord doesn't have a name for it. So, gives a very beautiful hint about it. By which we can feel it. Yayedam dharyate jagat. The lower nature and prakritim viddhi me param. Both the lower as well as the higher. Param means higher. That para prakriti and the apara means the lower. The eightfold prakriti that I told you in the earlier verse, that is the lower one. Now I will tell you the higher one. And what is it? What is it? Tell me what is it? And Lord says only this much, Yayedam dharyate jagat, by which this universe is, so to say, held together. Everything is held together by that higher nature. That is the thatness of it. So that is why it is called a higher nature. That makes us feel the sense of permanence in everything that is impermanent. Another reason for calling it higher is that by trying to explore this higher nature, we will reach God quickly. If we try to see what is that which does not change, look at anything in this universe and try to feel that which does not change, and we will see only God that does not change. We can easily see by common analysis that the unchanging part here and unchanging part there, they are same. There is no difference in that, because the difference that we see here, like we see that Vikas is different from Jason, and that is again different from Roshni, and like that, it is the, where is that difference? That difference is only in the changing aspects. So just follow this logic, that whatever creates the difference is only the changing aspect. And therefore, that which is unchanging cannot have any differentiation. That which is unchanging cannot have any difference. So it is therefore everywhere. It is everywhere. And thus it is then infinite. So we, by this analysis, can feel the presence of that divine principle everywhere. Lord calls both these, the changing as well as unchanging, as my expression, the expression of God. All is just pervaded by that one divine principle, God. God is in everything. So that is what is told here, my prakriti, my expression. I am the essence of it. You get attracted to various these things, but who is there really? I am there. I am the source of every attraction. I am the source of everything that is present. So whatever is in this universe, that I alone am. And therefore you should direct the mind towards me. The reason is being provided here, that why the mind should be directed to God. It is because God alone is there truly. All other that things that we see are the illusory appearances. It is this para-prakriti, the higher nature. There is, you cannot show that where is that difference in the higher nature, the unchanging aspect. But one difference you can show, that somehow or other we have that conviction, I am different from Vishwanath. You cannot show that where I really in my unchanging principle differ. But there is one expression that can be given to that, that when all my sense organs are disconnected from me. You know that state when I am not connected with my mind or intellect, I am not connected with my sense organs, the state of sleep. In the state of sleep, all of these are disconnected from me, and therefore I cannot make use of them at that time. I do not see, I do not hear. It is not even the state of dream. In dream you are using the inner organs, but in deep sleep you are not using them. And yet when you wake up with the same knowledge. Although the differentiation is not felt there, seen there, cannot be shown there, that obviously, as they say, a sleeping emperor is same as a sleeping dog. There is, because dog is not aware of the doghood, emperor is not aware of the being emperor. So they are at the state of deep sleep, both are same, and yet there is something that is still retaining their separateness, because when there is no mix-up like that. When they wake up, the dog doesn't think that I am emperor. We don't know, of course, how the dogs think. And the emperor doesn't wake up as a dog. It is, they wake up their own this thing, you know, that Vishwanath will not wake up as Triveni. Triveni will not wake up as Vishwanath. Although in deep sleep you cannot show the difference. Am I right, Triveni? So it is like that. That there is some principle that we cannot specify. And yet, that keeps the separateness. So that is called the jiva, the individual soul. But the existence of this individual soul, therefore, Lord will say that that is also a part of the illusion. Really, there is nothing like an individual soul, just as there is nothing like the external world, There is nothing like the individual soul also. Both of these are the prakriti, means nature, or the expression of the Lord. So this part is to be felt, you know, that whatever we come in contact with, whatever we deal with, anything that this in world we call I and mine, that is an expression of God alone. God alone exists in and through all of these. So this aspect is to be felt, and that is what is told here, that the two prakritis, the lower nature and the higher nature, the external material world. This is a very interesting thing, that the mind, intellect and such things also are considered material in Sankhya, and also automatically in Vedanta. These are called finer matter, that's all. The finer matter, that is called feeling or intellect. The grosser, when it becomes grosser, then you have that world of the external sense organs, perceived by the external sense organs. But all is just matter alone. And the higher nature, because of which they there is the sense of individuality in all these changing things. So Lord says in the next verse that this is what is the whole world about. There is nothing apart from that. Etad yonini bhutani sarvani tyupadharaya aham krishnasya jagatah prabhava pralayastatha. So know that all beings have these two for their origin. I am thus the origin of the entire universe as also its destroyer. I am the origin of the whole universe. There is nothing apart from that. And this is how the whole universe has come from me. Whole universe like this comes from me. It originates from me and gets dissolved also in me. I am the destroyer also. Vedanta is very forthright about it. There is nothing that, you know, the attempt to make things pleasant. And we like to say that, well, this is this world, God made it. Yes, God made it, but God destroys it also. What is the meaning of destroying? Because it is illusory, it is going to get destroyed. That is how we, in fact, judge that something is not real. Something is not real because it gets destroyed. It doesn't remain. If it remains, then it is real. If it is not real, then it won't remain. That is the destruction of it. Things come, things vanish. And we become very happy when somebody is born. Now when somebody dies, we become sad. That, oh, my so-and-so died, very sad. Well, when there was birth, the process of death actually began then. The deterioration started. And so it culminated in what is called death. The form came into existence and just went back into non-existence again. The wave rose and wave again fell back in the sea. So, similarly, everything in the world is formed like a wave and gets merged into the sea again from where it came. It came from God. Let us feel this. This is a good mental exercise, a meditation. Let us feel each of us is a wave that is rising and is going back. It will go back. It is a wave, today or tomorrow. There is no certainty about it. It comes and goes. That is its nature. There is no point in trying to preserve it per se. It is going to go away. It cannot be stopped. It is the very nature of it. So we must see that where it comes from. From God it comes. It God in dissolves. The God is not subject to change. Remains as it is. There is no birth to God, no death to God. There is only the forms come up and forms dissolve. That is the secret of our existence. That is to be perceived. It is a matter for feeling it, that we are essentially divine. And just as every wave is essentially ocean, is it not? What keeps it apart from ocean? What keeps it that apart from ocean is only illusion. That illusion is held on to by us. With great tenacity we keep on holding on to this delusion that I am this little being. I am the wave. And well, that is what prevents us from being ocean. Otherwise, we are ocean. What has got the wave to do to become ocean? It doesn't have to do anything, only give up the ignorance that it is a little wave. Give it up. Give it up. Let us give it up. And then we are ocean. Isn't it simple? It is that simple. That and God says that therefore know that there is nothing apart from me. The next verse says that, but we will see it in the next Friday's class. But if you have questions, yes, there are quite a few hands. I got an email. It is by somebody in the class but didn't give the name. It came to me as Vedanta student. An email from Vedanta student who says that there should be a separate question answer class because we don't get enough time to ask question in the class, and also we by the time we think of the question the time is all gone. So therefore there should be a separate question-answer class every Saturday or so. So we'll think about it, but for now you can ask questions. Okay, Sheila.
If we need this body to make our way through the earth, what prevents us from not having the realization that we're one and then the continuing to stay in our bodies and embrace our human tendencies. How can we, as subjective beings, have an objective experience?
Yeah, you are very correct. As subject, we cannot have the objective experience. We can have only subject-object experience. And therefore, to have really the objective, true understanding, what is to be done is to give up being a limited subject. It has nothing to do with death. It has to do with knowledge. It has to do with death of ignorance. When the ignorance dies, then only it dies. Otherwise, even if the body dies, you will take another body. Because of the ignorance, it will continue. That as long as there is ignorance, it will go on. So this ego, destruction of this false identity, that is the knowledge. And then, therefore, you will get the wisdom of that reality, and that will be the objective experience. That is why Vedanta claims to be a true science. A true science, because one of the important tests of science is objectivity. Something that you know by abstracting your personal perceptions. Your personality needs to be taken out, and thus you get the objective reality. Therefore, some say it is very cold, some say it is terribly hot. We have a problem here all the time, you know. If we start AC, then some people start shivering. And if we stop AC, then some people start So it is because this is subjective. Whether it is hot or cold, it is subjective. There is no particular objective standard for that. And we say if it is 50 degrees, we will say it is cold. For a person, somebody had come the other day from Florida, and at 65, had to put on a few sweaters and all that, you know. And saying that it is cold. But if suppose somebody is an Eskimo, just came from that land, would die of a heat stroke here at 65, you see. Therefore, whether it is hot or cold, science says, see the thermometer and say the temperature is 65 degrees Fahrenheit, measured by that expansion of mercury or whatever. And thus, it thinks that it is objective, that this is an object. Whether you feel it cold or whether you feel it hot, that is subjective perception. What is the temperature, that we can tell you, that is objective, 65 degrees. But is it really objective? Subject is there, after all, which is perceiving it. It is not truly objective. The true objectivity comes only when the subject is completely removed. In Kant's philosophy, therefore, the critic of pure reason, Kant formulated this wonderful idea that we can never arrive at the ultimate truth, because whatever we perceive is X plus mind. The X remains always unknown and unknowable. That mind cannot be taken out from that, and therefore X is always unknown. But Vedanta says no. You can take it out. This being unreal, it can be taken out. And also shows the path to do it. That by going beyond this, you can remove this I, and thus the knowledge dawns. But then, don't think that I will become a person of knowledge then. This is the mistake that many make in understanding Vedanta, that I, who is bound, now I will become free. No. This I itself is bondage that will be destroyed. The perfection will remain. I will never become perfect. The destruction of this ego, please don't mistake it to be the death of the body. No. Death of the body is not death of ignorance. When the death of ignorance occurs, then that realization dawns there. So, that is where the objectivity comes. Real objectivity. And therefore, Vedanta or this any religious science like this shows you the way to real objective truth. God is an objective truth, not manufactured by a subject. So therefore that truth is realized through this process. Ullu, you had a question?
Yes, I was just wondering, understand it being impermanent, but I'm wondering, why would it be any less real? Because it's also an expression of divinity. Why is it less real than saying,
That is a good question. Now, why should it be called less real if it is expression of divinity? It ceases to be less real when you see the divinity. It is the less this. See, to whom are the scriptures told? We have to understand that point there. That the scriptures are told for the one who doesn't know the truth. For the one who knows the truth, scriptures become unnecessary. And when truth is known, then therefore there is nothing lower or higher there. It is for the purpose of giving up. It is told that it is lower because our mind somehow thinks that one has to go higher. So therefore give it up, then you will get to the ultimate truth. And then you will see that it is the whole thing is really one. There is nothing lower or higher. As Sri Ramakrishna says, that one wants to go and see the roof. And so he goes on to the roof by staircase. And once goes on to the roof, climbing step after step, goes higher and higher and goes to the roof. Now after going to the roof, he sees that the material with which the roof is made, more or less the same material is used for making the staircase and the other parts of the building also, same timber, same these things, similar things. So that the perception comes that the whole building is really the same thing. But initially to get that knowledge has to climb step by step. So therefore the idea God is higher and the things are lower, they are told for this understanding. This is for clarification of the or purification of understanding. Yes, George? Yeah. Yeah. That is this, you are right. That is exactly the process. Yeah. Then why take it up? The fools. It is not impossible. It is possible. George Parker can be one of them, is it not? But then it is worth, is it not? It is worth. Don't worry about them, you know. Let us worry about illuminating ourselves. Then you can become the source of illumination for others. Whether you want or not, you know, again, the truth being objective, it doesn't depend whether you want or whether you don't. It comes. That is how you feel, that God says nothing is made. If you get screwed up, then it is your problem. Not the problem of God. Well, from that generalization, you leave out those who are not, those few. Well, yes, everybody has right to feel that, you see. Okay, then, let us conclude with the closing prayers. As you know, tomorrow we have this spiritual retreat. Any of you still want to join or sign up for that, there is room, so you can sign up for it. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvinasrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namaniyane Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.